This is Securing the Vote, Election 2020, a political podcast by Comm 104. This week's episode dives straight into election security. We speak with Stanford University professors and students to discuss the unique vulnerabilities that may inhibit the stability of the 2020 election. Misinformation threatens our representative democracy. We are experiencing increasing levels of political polarization and distrust in fellow citizens, government institutions, and traditional media. With 5 days until one of the most important elections in American history, we're learning about building democratic resilience against widespread disinformation and ensuring a secure election.
If you go back to the Nixon administration, the idea was that attacking the press was politically beneficial. It would make re-election easier because criticisms that were voiced or things that would be uncovered would not be believed.
That's Jay Hamilton, a professor of communication and department chair of the Department of Communication at Stanford University.
If you fast forward to the current administration, you see a similar attempt to almost inoculate itself against criticism by questioning reporting, by questioning science, even by questioning education.
Accountability reporting and investigative journalism play a key role in our democracy. They provide citizens with information they can use to make decisions, and they hold our elected officials accountable. With the rise of social media and declining trust in traditional media, misinformation can be used to polarize viewers and influence votes to affect the lives of millions.
I think this year, you see attempts by Facebook and Twitter to label misinformation or have fact checkers that provide potential check, slowing down the circulation of stories while they are fact-checked, even saying that there are certain types of misinformation about voting, for instance, that might not be allowable. I think that it's important for people to be vigilant, regardless of their party, to make sure that the focus on the edges doesn't distract from the truth, which is that to date, the election is proceeding well, that there is not voter fraud. To the extent that people get discouraged or disheartened, part of that can also be a political victory for those who want to undermine our democracy. So don't get demoralized, don't get disheartened, do get to the polls or do mail your ballot in.
Whether you are making plans for how to safely vote at polling booths or placing your ballot into the mailbox, it is important to realize that social media is not directly responsible for the demise of democracy. It has been weaponized to exacerbate existing vulnerabilities to network propaganda and disinformation, where there is high pre-existing polarization, low trust, and hyper-partisan media. Tom Westfall is a student in the Stanford University Law School and International Policy Master's Program. He explains how a number of other factors can play an inhibitory role in keeping the election secure.
A lot of jurisdictions have rapidly changed to vote by mail, and that's like a very difficult administrative feat to pull off, much less in a pandemic, much less on a compressed timeframe with limited resources.
Because of these rapid transitions, some may be even considered frantic. Voters and election administrators are left wondering how to handle their ballot. Tom illustrates just how these changes are reshaping the voting system and individualized voting experiences.
Election administrators have had to make a lot of changes to the in-person voting experience, whether that means places that have historically been polling places have had to close and they've had to find new locations. The ways that people have voted using voting machines and having to, lots of people having to touch the same surface. That's had to change. New protocols have had to be implemented for like sanitizing those surfaces every single time.
In addition, changes at the legislative level are introducing an increasing number of new and unprecedented steps in the voting process associated with mail-in voting that leaves areas for questioning and possible disregard of votes. The lack of stability in the election process may lie, according to Tom, in the unique variation of submission, participation, and acceptance of this year's voting.
There's been tremendous change and flex and uncertainty across the country in states' election laws and regulations. Things have continued to change even now, even in the last couple of days. new regulations, new rules, a lot of litigation, lots of court cases are being decided that have like very real substantive impacts on how votes are counted or if they'll be counted.
Nevertheless, efforts put forth by leaders to stabilize the election have offered some optimism.
For the most part, they've pulled off rapidly transitioning to vote by mail, which is really kind of a miracle and really speaks volumes about the professionalism and dedication of the country's election administrators.
Similar to Professor Hamilton, Tom too worries that the fusion of misinformation in our daily news has and will continue to cause irreparable damage.
There's a lot of rhetoric coming from political candidates about the legitimacy of a lot of these election processes. And that's causing a lot of people to worry that their vote won't be counted or that the election results will be fraudulent in some way. And that's deeply destabilizing. Because the stakes of this election are so high, those instincts that people have and the distrust and partisanship might result in some really terrible consequences.
The term fake news, largely popularized by President Trump's administration, has contributed to much of the distrust Tom speaks of. In fact, in 2017, the term was even added to the Oxford Learner's Dictionary, defining fake news as false reports of events written and read on websites. However, the magnitude of the phrase's impact may go beyond social media and into the streets.
For the first time, really, in decades and decades, there's likely to be violence on Election Day in America, kind of regardless of where it originates. It will give an opening for political actors to say that the election's results are not the true will of the people, absent that violence.
Transition to Professor Shelby Grossman, who holds a PhD in government from Harvard and has spent the past year and a half working on disinformation campaigns at the Stanford Internet Observatory. At Stanford, Professor Grossman teaches a course titled Online Open Source Investigations, where students learn best practices for finding information online and identifying potentially inauthentic information in the first place. Professor Grossman spoke with us about the pervasiveness of misinformation today and how it affects elections.
You know, we all have access to the internet. For the most part, the government is not censoring what we are seeing on the internet. And so as a result, people can just kind of say whatever they want. The social platforms have various content moderation policies, but even if they were perfectly preventing all sorts of election-related misinformation, someone could still start a website that is sharing election misinformation. So part of this, I think, is just that we've decided we want to live in a society that is free and where the government is not censoring what we see. And so there just is going to be bad actors and well-intentioned actors, you know, sharing untrue information.
This week, six Russian intelligence operatives were indicted for computer hacking, wire fraud, aggravated identity theft, and money laundering. It was discovered that one of the goals of their operation was to publicize the stolen information that they found as part of the disinformation campaign to undermine and delegitimize international anti-doping organizations who helped publicly expose a Russian state-sponsored athlete doping program. Dr. Grossman spoke of the goals that actors have in using misinformation to interfere with elections.
Sometimes the goal is to sow discord or to, you know, further polarize society. So, you know, the obvious example of this comes from the Internet Research Agency's attempts to meddle in the US elections in 2016 on social media. They were creating content that was designed to polarize both the left and the right, and they wanted these two polarized communities to kind of like fight it out. So the, you know, more prominent example was the use of the hashtag Black Lives Matter in left-leaning and right-leaning groups, with the, you know, presumed attempt being to let these two groups find each other and see how polarized each side's messaging was, and that to, you know, further polarize people.
But sometimes sowing discord and polarization are not the only motivations, and there are also disinformation campaigns that are trying to push a particular narrative.
Still going back to the IRA US example, the Internet Research Agency was definitely trying to support Trump, so they had all these, you know, like crooked Hillary memes. I think the trend there is that increasingly this messaging is not false. it's not true. It's just like non-falsifiable, hyper-partisan cheerleading content or content trying to denigrate someone else.
And of course, there is also a great deal of power in undermining a populace's trust in their elections.
You know, there's this term color revolution, which has up until recently really been used to mean, you know, when people in an authoritarian country protest against like an authoritarian leader who's trying to hold on to power. But Russia in particular has been trying to get people to use this term to mean like foreign interference in a country's domestic issues and like, you know, foreigners are supporting these protesters. And so there's similarly been some narratives pushed by both domestic and international actors trying to claim that there's a color revolution happening in the US right now. And there's all this foreign meddling and trying to like preemptively undermine election results.
But perhaps even more frighteningly, it does not take a technologically advanced adversary to conduct a misinformation campaign. Dr. Grossman gave an example of an investigation she worked on where one individual out of Nigeria was running a campaign on some low-budget news websites, claiming that the U.S. election had been undermined by a large amount of voter fraud. Dr. Grossman went on to describe the difficulty in determining the role misinformation plays in affecting outcomes of elections, and how we'll never really know how Russia's propagating of misinformation may have contributed to the outcome of the 2016 election.
So the reason it's hard to know is that the people who are consuming disinformation are different than the people who are not consuming disinformation. And so that means that it's really hard to figure out what the independent effect of consuming disinformation is. To, you know, just use the Internet Research Agency example again, some of the content that the Internet Research Agency created was like Texas secessionist content. They created Facebook pages that were like, oh, Texas should secede from the union. You know, you could imagine that it's not like any random person is going to follow this sort of page. The people who are going to follow this sort of page probably already think that Texas should secede from the union. So if you want to like know the effect of a disinformation campaign, you would have to know like the marginal effect of this one page on people who are probably already part of lots of other totally authentic, organic Texas secessionist Facebook pages. People try to come up with ways to identify the causal effect here, but as far as I know, no one's come up with like, you know, a super great research design yet.
Professor Grossman also spoke of how collaborations between civil society groups, as well as between academia, the social media platforms, and the government are likely the keys to solving this problem. She also mentioned the responsibility of influencers on social media.
You know, I think influencers on social media have a particular responsibility for being, you know, really careful in what they share. A lot of the election misinformation that we're seeing is quite well-intentioned. So, you know, to give one example, I worked on a project where we saw people tweeting that if you are a victim of domestic violence, you should not register to vote, because if you register to vote, your address will be public and then your abuser could find you. And, you know, of course, that's true, but I think 38 states have policies in place where you can mask your address for precisely this purpose. And so, you know, this person was trying to be really well-intentioned, but that could really have the effect of deterring people from voting when in fact there are ways that they could vote safely.
But being aware of the ubiquity of misinformation does not make a person immune. And Professor Grossman, too, is on social media. She shared some of her own tips for how to stay safe online and ensure that the news one is digesting is genuine.
A lot of stuff you see on social media these days is just like a statement. It's not necessarily attached to like a URL linking out to CNN or something. I become really suspicious about those types of tweets and Facebook posts and Instagram posts where someone's like, oh my God, you know, USPS is under attack. I want to see, you know, the independently reported article to kind of back up that claim before I believe it, let alone feel outraged about it. Like, I try to think about how content I see makes me feel. And I think about whether the person who created that content has any incentive to make me feel that way. So that's kind of another tactic that I use for myself, just to like be careful about what really impacts the way I think about something.
That is all we have for today. For more information on the 2020 election, visit our website, newsroom104.com. This has been Securing the Vote, Election 2020. Thanks for listening.